Black lives only matter when whites take them.
Work on your game.
Approaching the game aggressively, with that aggression, with that confidence to dominate a game.
Dre Baldwin, DreAllDay.com.
Work on your game.
You are now tuned into the show where you learn the discipline to show up day after day to do the work, confidence to put yourself out there boldly and authentically, and the mental toughness to continue showing up, doing the work, putting yourself out there, even when the success you've expected to achieve is yet to be achieved. And on top of all this, you get a huge dose of personal initiative, which is the go-getter energy that moves anyone out there, including yourself, of course, to go and make things happen instead of waiting for things to happen. We put all this together in one bundle, one package, one mindset, one method, one philosophy, one book, one show. This masterclass here that is called Work on Your Game. My name is Dre Baldwin, also known as Dre All Day, and welcome to the show. And today is going to be a different type of episode than what you're used to here from Work on Your Game, because the material, the bulk of the material that I'm going to be sharing here today is not coming straight out of my mind. This is actually an open, anonymous letter that was written by a UC Berkeley history professor. So this is a person who works in the history department of a very well-respected university. UC Berkeley is, as far as I know, I mean, I'm not in academia, but as far as I've heard, UC Berkeley is looked at as one of the top colleges you could go to. And he wrote an open letter where he talks about a lot of the racial unrest going on in the United States, but from a completely different angle than what I'd heard anyone talk about it to this point. And I'm recording this in the summer of 2020. So I read this letter/article, and I shared it on social media, and I'm actually recording this the same day that I actually read it because I liked it so much. And not only am I just going to read this, because if I was just reading it, all I would do is just send you a link. I will link to it down below in the show notes. So if you look at the show notes and don't see that link, just hit me up anywhere. Let me know it's not there. I'll make sure I get it there, but I will put it in there. And I'm also going to insert my own commentary as I'm reading through this, because a lot of the things that this professor wrote about are things that I completely agree with. And I think he has some really interesting viewpoints and some interesting angles when it comes to this thing that I think he put them in words in a way that I think many people are thinking, probably some of you who are listening to me right now. And he mentioned some things that I have been thinking, some things that I have said, but he said them maybe in a different way. Obviously, since he's a different person, I'm going to insert my own notes in this as we go through it and let you know what I think about it. And obviously, of course, being that this show is called Work on Your Game, you should think about what you think about it as we go through this whole thing. So again, the title of this, well, I don't even have to tell you the title. I'm telling you what it is. You can just look in the show notes wherever you're listening to this. Look in the show notes. The link is right there. So you can read the whole thing yourself if you prefer to read it rather than listening to me recite it out loud. But I think I'm pretty good out loud reader. I think I'm pretty good at these public speaking things. So without further ado, again, this is an open letter that was written anonymously by a UC Berkeley history professor about everything that's going on in the summer of 2020, whenever you happen to be reading this. Maybe it's still going on by the time, listening to this, maybe it's still going on by the time you hear it. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, no matter who you are, where you're from. So without further ado, let's get into it. Anytime I'm interjecting my own opinions and my own follow-ups in addition to what he says, I'll let you know so you can separate what this guy said from what I'm actually saying. So let's get to it. Now I'm reading. Dear Professors XYZ, I am one of your colleagues at the University of California, Berkeley. I have met you both personally, but do not know you closely, and I am contacting you anonymously with apologies. I am worried that writing this email publicly might lead to me losing my job and likely all future jobs in my field. Now, let me add a note right there. This is one of the challenges that I see with what's going on right now with the racial unrest. I'm just going to use that phrase. Right? I'm not going to label it anything else, because I think everyone can agree with that one. Any other phrase, I think I may be throwing some people off, but I want everybody to stay with me. With the racial unrest going on right now in America, it's hard to express any opinion that doesn't go along with whatever is the prevailing opinion, mostly through social media, because social media is how messages are spreading virally and quickly. And if you happen to say the wrong thing, or you get shown having the wrong opinion, even if you had that wrong opinion 3 years ago, they can end up canceling your whole career. It could cancel your business. It could just just cancel you as being a person who was accepted and liked by a large portion of the population, which is, I think that's crazy. And this author of this letter is going to get into that as we go further into it. And this is me saying this as a young Black man who has a following on social media, who is an athlete, who writes books and things like that. And I will be a person who, for the most part, not be a victim of this cancel culture that we have going on. But I still think that it's wrong that people are getting canceled for having opinions that go against whatever, again, the wave happens to be. I actually just saw today, who knows what's going to become of this story, but there's a running back who plays for Oklahoma State University. He saw a picture of his coach, of his football team, wearing a T-shirt of an apparent news network that is very conservative and very pro-Donald Trump and supports Trump and shares stories that co-sign Donald Trump. And for whatever, and not for whatever reason, we know the reason, this football player saw the picture, right? And he posted on Twitter that he won't be doing anything for the football program at that school. And this guy's a prominent player, really good player. He won't be doing anything for the football program or with the football program until there is change. That was what he said. He said change in all capital letters. But he didn't say what kind of change. He said it was inappropriate that the coach was wearing that shirt. And this was just a picture that the coach that had gotten posted to the coach on a trip. Like he went fishing or something with his kid. And he had a picture. In the picture, he's just wearing this T-shirt. That's the only thing in the photo that says anything. I didn't even know what it stood for. It said OAN. I have no idea what OAN means. I didn't look it up. I don't care. But when I saw this post, obviously it became a story. And I'm like, okay, so this football player is basically saying that his coach is not allowed to wear a T-shirt supporting a news network because the player does not agree with whatever that news network talks about or apparently stands for. That's crazy to me. Now, if he was wearing a T-shirt of maybe something that was directly against a certain religion or against a certain type of people, then I would understand. But Donald Trump is a real person. He does actually exist. He did actually win the presidency. And that there's a news network that supports him, even if you didn't vote for Trump, it doesn't make it inappropriate for someone to wear a shirt supporting the news network. What if he had a shirt with a picture of Donald Trump, who's actually the president? Would that be inappropriate? Could you get canceled for that? That's an interesting question right there. I wonder what would happen. It's probably already happened. But anyway, let me get back to reading this letter because that's what we're supposed to be doing here. All right. This is the next paragraph. In your recent departmental emails, you mentioned our pledge to diversity, but I am increasingly alarmed by the absence of diversity of opinion on the topic of recent protests and our community response to them. In the extended links and resources you provided, I cannot find a single instance of substantial counterargument or alternative narrative to explain the underrepresentation of Black individuals in academia or their overrepresentation in the criminal justice system. The explanation provided in your documentation to the near exclusion of all others is univariate. The problems of the Black community are caused by whites, or when whites are not physically present, by the infiltration of white supremacy and white systemic racism into American brains, souls, and institutions. All right, let me get my note here. So what I'll do is I'll get my notes at the end of each paragraph. So you know I got to the end of a paragraph. What this professor is saying is that this university sent out a letter basically saying that anything against Black people is wrong and racism is wrong and systemic oppression is wrong. Y'all been seeing these messages from everybody. And they basically are saying, he is saying that the university's literature, everything that they put out is basically saying that the fault of Black people being oppressed and so many of them being in prison is the fault of either white people or white supremacy, or is either white people period or white supremacy directly. And what he is saying, this professor is saying, you are not offering any counter arguments to that. You're not offering any other side to it, but this one side. You're saying the main reason, the only reason that Black people are facing this systemic oppression is because of white people and or white supremacy. You are not offering any other options and you are not open to any other options. And he's saying that he disagrees with the way that they are presenting. That's why this is interesting. Let's continue and you'll learn more as we keep going. Next paragraph. Many cogent objections to this thesis have been raised by sober voices, including from within the Black community itself, such as Thomas Sowell and Wilford Riley. These people are not racists or Uncle Toms, quote unquote. They are intelligent scholars who reject a narrative that strips Black people of agency and systemically externalizes the problems of the Black community onto outsiders. Their view is entirely absent from the departmental and Cal Berkeley-wide communiques. Now, here's my note here. He's mentioning two people who have come out and said, listen, even though the Black community Yes, we can look at the raw data and see that there is a higher percentage of Black people in prison than it is a nonlinear relationship to the amount of Black people living in America. It's way more, a higher percentage of Black people imprisoned than there is a percentage of Black people just living, period, which means, and this is what many people have done, many, many people, even people very close to me, I've heard them argue saying, well, that's obviously, that's what systemic racism is. That's what white supremacy is. That's why we represent such a higher percentage in the prisons. And what this professor is pointing out is that others have pointed out that it's not 100% because of white people that there are more Black people in prison. Like some Black people are in prison because they actually, you know, committed crimes. It's not because of a racist white person. It's not because of white supremacy. This is actually true. This is 100% true. It is absolutely a fact, but nobody wants to point that out. And if actually there are some people who do want to point it out, but the people who point it out are either labeled racist or they are canceled or they are attacked by the social media lynch mob and forced into being quiet. And again, all of you know exactly what I'm talking about. You've seen it. Maybe you've been a part of it on one side or the other, but we're not here to judge you. Let's continue. The claim that the difficulties of the Black community faces are entirely casually explained. The claim that the difficulties that the Black community faces are entirely causally explained by exogenous factors in the form of white systemic racism, white supremacy, and other forms of white discrimination remains a problematic hypothesis that should be vigorously challenged by historians. Instead, it is being treated as an axiomatic and actionable truth without serious consideration of its profound flaws or its worrying implication of total Black impotence. This hypothesis is transforming our institution and our culture without any space for dissent outside of a tightly policed, narrow discourse. This paragraph right here, this could summarize the entire conversation that we're having right here today between what I'm reading this man say and what I'm saying myself. It is saying that a lot of people, including Black people and a whole bunch of woke white individuals, seem to want to push this idea that the only reason that the Black community is facing whatever troubles that you believe exist in the Black community are because of white systemic racism, white supremacy, and anything else that has to do with white people doing it to us. As I told y'all not too long ago, right here on this show, we are not victims when it comes to Black people. If you are white listening to this, do not look at a Black person as a victim. You don't have to feel any guilt because you happen to be white in whatever situation you have in your life. It is not your fault that a Black person who is not in the position that they want to be in life is not your specific fault. It's not the white man's or white woman's fault that that system exists. And it seems like a lot of the discourse going on in media these days wants to continue to push that. And what's crazy is there's a whole bunch of white people promoting it. There's a whole bunch of white people saying it. You know what? White systemic oppression. I'm white. White systemic oppression is the reason why you, Black person, are not in the best space that you could be in. And no, I need to do something about it. I need to recognize that. I need to shut up and listen. I need to do something to help these Black people who don't have the same opportunities as me. It's a victimhood mentality. And I hate the victimhood mentality that Black people seem to have. We seem to be embracing this. And white people are going along with it, co-signing it. And there are very few prominent Black voices who have been able to speak up loudly enough and let people know, listen, we are not victims, and have it be accepted. You can say it, and some people will listen to it maybe in small amounts. But if you say it loud enough and enough people see it, people are going to start to attack you just for even putting that out there. And again, we have Black people and white people going with this, which makes no sense whatsoever. And even in high education, this is a university. Again, I told you, Cal Berkeley is a very well-respected university. Even they are doing it. So even the people that you would think in a university, one of the main things that you get in school, I would expect that you're going to get in school, is you're going to be challenged to think. You're going to be challenged to come up with your own opinions and your own ideas, look at what has been accepted as true, and be able to challenge it and be able to have a back and forth discussion with intellectually stimulated people who are willing to hear different opinions and challenge each other's opinions and figure things out, get the right information. But even at universities right now, this is not even being allowed because there's only one way of looking at things. It must be this. And if someone was to offer something different as this professor is proposing, they will probably get canceled, so to speak, and they wouldn't even be able to put their point out there. And that is, I agree with him, that is completely crazy. As we continue, a counter narrative exists. If you have time, please consider examining some of the documents I attached at the end of this email. Overwhelmingly, the reasoning provided by BLM, that's Black Lives Matter, for those who don't know, and allies is either primarily anecdotal, as is in the case with the bulk of Ta-Nehisi Coates' undeniably moving article, or it is transparently motivated. As an example of the latter problem, consider the proportion of Black incarcerated Americans. This proportion is often used to characterize the criminal justice system as anti-Black. However, if we use the precise same methodology, we would have to conclude that the criminal justice system is even more anti-male than it is anti-Black. Now, my note on that is exactly. Because if we say the criminal justice system must be against Black people because there is a higher proportion of Blacks in prison, well, there's also a higher proportion of men in prison. So is the criminal justice system also anti-men? Most of you will probably say, no, Dre, that's ridiculous. It's not anti-men. Of course. So the same methodology we could also say is not anti-Black. Is there a higher proportion of Blacks in prison? Absolutely. But is it because the system is all against Black people? No. Is some of it, could some of it have led to that? Absolutely. But we can't say that's the main reason. The main reason is some of these people actually have committed crimes, knowing that they were crimes, they got caught, and they ended up where they ended up. So we can't absolve ourselves as Black people of responsibility for that by blaming it on white people or blaming it on, quote, the system. Let's continue. We would characterize criminal justice as a systemically misandrous conspiracy against innocent American men. Would we do that? I hope you see that this type of reasoning is flawed and requires a significant suspension of our rational faculties. Black people are not incarcerated at higher rates than their involvement in violent crime would predict. This fact has been demonstrated multiple times across multiple jurisdictions in multiple countries. And yet, I see my department uncritically reproducing a narrative that diminishes Black agency in favor of a white-centric explanation that appeals to the department's apparent desire to shoulder the, quote, white man's burden, close quote, and to promote a narrative of white guilt. So this is I'm out of the paragraph now. This is a Black professor saying, since no one would in their right mind say that the criminal justice system is against men, even though the stats would suggest that, nobody is saying that because we all know this sounds ridiculous. People are suspending their thinking in this particular department, the history department at UC Berkeley, and there are white people doing it who are basically saying, is the white man's fault that Black people are in prison, when it doesn't stand up to scrutiny if you actually looked at it. And what this professor is saying is, look, if you look at the violent crime committed by Black men, it is directly in line with the amount of Black men who are imprisoned in the United States. These are not accidental crimes. All right? These are not racist laws that are all of a sudden putting these people in jail. It is directly in line with the actions that certain people are taking that are putting them into the position that they are. And this is the thing that, again, it's been interesting, entertaining, and in some ways annoying to me at the same time that I'm looking at this, that a lot of white people are taking on what we're now calling white guilt for the calamities that Black people are dealing with. But listen, Black people are dealing with certain issues because Black people have taken certain actions or certain inactions that have put them in the positions that they're in. But you're not allowed to say that right now. Otherwise, you will be canceled, especially if you're white. Even Black people have faced this. As we continue. If we claim that the criminal justice system is white supremacist, why is it that Asian Americans, Indian Americans, and Nigerian Americans are incarcerated at vastly lower rates than white Americans? This is a funny sort of white supremacy. Even Jewish Americans are incarcerated less than Gentile whites. I think it's fair to say that your average white supremacist disapproves of Jews, and yet these alleged white supremacists incarcerate Gentiles at vastly higher rates than Jews. Those of you who don't know what Gentiles are, I'm out of the paragraph. Gentiles are people who are not Jewish. And he said, Jewish people aren't in prison as much as even regular, quote unquote, regular white people. So if the whole system is white supremacist, that means they would be doing it to everybody, not just Black people. But they're not doing it to Asians, Indians, or Nigerians who live in America. It's only happening to Black people, which, again, the whole narrative of Black people being in the position they're in because white people are doing all these terrible things to anyone who's not white. Again, the white supremacist narrative doesn't make sense. A white supremacist means white over everything, but it's only Black people who see themselves as having some problem and being victims of white supremacy. Why aren't anyone else falling into the same hole? It doesn't stand up. As we continue, none of this is addressed in your literature. None of this is explained beyond hand-waving and ad hominems. Quote, those are racist dog whistles, close quote. Quote, the model minority myth is white supremacist, close quote. Quote, only fascists talk about Black-on-Black crime, close quote, ad nauseum. These types of statements do not amount to counter-arguments. They are simply arbitrary, offensive classifications intended to silence and oppress discourse. Any serious historian will recognize these for the silencing orthodoxy tactics they are, common to suppressive regimes, doctrines, and religions throughout time and space. They are intended to crush real diversity and permanently exile the culture of robust criticism from our department. Now, I'm out of the paragraph now. This guy mentioned a few things that people say anytime you try to bring up any stat that puts any type of blame or responsibility, let's call it responsibility, on Black people for the situation that they're in, specifically when it comes to crime and imprisonment. They say, oh, well, that's a dog whistle. It's racist if a white person said it, and you're Uncle Tom or a coon if a Black person says it. Or they'll say only fascists talk about Black on Black crime, but you're just trying to absolve the white man of his problems when you're bringing up Black on Black crime. Black on Black crime is a real thing, and it's a much bigger threat to my life as a Black man than it is anything that a police officer would ever probably do to me. Doesn't mean a random thing couldn't happen to me at the hands of a cop, but it's much more likely if I lose my life to violence, it'll be because of a Black man, not because of a police officer. And the stats have shown that clearly. But if you bring that up again, even if you're Black, you will be canceled. And if you're white, don't even think about it. Continuing. Increasingly, we are being called upon to comply and subscribe to BLM's problematic view of history, and the department is being presented as unified on the matter. In particular, ethnic minorities are being aggressively marshaled into a single position. Any apparent unity is surely a function of the fact that dissent could almost certainly lead to expulsion or cancellation for those of us in a precarious position, which is no small number. Out of the paragraph now. Professor is saying that the UC Berkeley History Department put out certain statements about racial equality, and they are against white supremacy, and we stand with Black people, et cetera, et cetera. And they put that out as the Department of History. This guy who I'm reading from, he works in the Department of History. So he's saying that you all have put out this message that says, all right, we all believe this. But the fact of the matter is, I don't believe it, but I can't say it out loud because I would get canceled. And because all of us are in a precarious position right now, probably he's probably referring to the fact that COVID-19 hurt a lot of people's money and a lot of people's job status. And if he was to lose his job right now, he might not be able to get another one, as he said earlier. So he can't say it out loud because he would be expelled and canceled, and that would hurt his ability to provide for himself. So he can't even offer any type of dissent. He can't offer a counter argument because everyone who has one is being silenced before they even start speaking right now. I think you would agree with that. Continuing. I personally don't dare speak out against the BLM narrative. That's Black Lives Matter again. And with this barrage of alleged unity being mass produced by the administration, tenured professoriate, the UC administration, corporate America, and the media, the punishment for dissent is a clear danger at a time of widespread economic vulnerability. I'm certain that if my name were attached to this email, I would lose my job and all future jobs, even though I believe in and can justify every word that I type. So I'm out of paragraph now. He basically just said what I just explained, that he can't say anything because the whole everybody, whether it's the department, the entire school, all the professors, corporate America, and the media, everyone is in agreement right now that the Black man's problem is because of white supremacy and racism and social injustice. And if anyone says anything that goes against that, if you have any type of position that you can be canceled from, you will be canceled. And he knows that. And that's why he ain't putting his name on this, but he is saying it. Continuing. The vast majority of violence visited on the Black community is committed by Black people. There are virtually no marches for these invisible crimes, no public silences, no heartfelt letters from the UC regents, deans, and departmental heads. The message is clear. Black lives only matter when whites take them. Black violence is expected and insoluble, while white violence requires explanation and demands solution. Minor paragraph now. This is pretty much the crux of what many people, both Black and white, have offered as counter arguments to all of the, again, racial unrest and social justice, I don't know, movement, if we want to call it that, that has been going on recently. I think a lot of people have said it in a way that is not tactful enough for it to really be heard by anyone on the other side, especially when people are emotionally charged. But this is factually correct. As I just said a few moments ago, if I was to lose my life from violence, it's more than likely it would be at the hands of a Black man than it would be at the hands of a police officer. Again, statistically speaking. Now, could it randomly happen another way? Absolutely. But statistically speaking, if I, as a 38-year-old Black man, was to lose my life before I turn 40, it would most likely be at the hands of another black person. But even if I was to say that out loud as a counter argument to black people blaming white people and white people blaming white people for everything going on right now, again, I can be canceled. Now, I don't have a job to be canceled from, but you understand what I'm saying. Let's continue. Please look into your hearts and see how monstrously bigoted this formulation truly is. No discussion is permitted for non-black victims of black violence who proportionately outnumber black victims of non-black violence. This is especially bitter in the Bay Area, where Asian victimization by black assailants has reached epidemic proportions to the point that the San Francisco police chief has advised Asians to stop hanging good luck charms on their doors, as this attracts the attention of overwhelmingly black home invaders. Home invaders like George Floyd. Now, at this point, the author continues to put out the facts that black people commit more crimes against non-blacks than non-blacks commit against blacks. This is also true. And as he said earlier, Black Lives Matter, they only pop up and the hashtag only happens and people only even say it and chant it and protest it when a black person loses their life at the hands of a non-black person. But when black people kill each other, which happens much more often, it is much more regular. There are no marches. There are no hashtags. Nobody seems to care. It's like a normal accepted thing. I talked about this in the episode on hypocrisy, and I explained why people think that way. That doesn't mean I agree with them thinking that way. I hope you all understand that when I explain certain things to you, doesn't mean that I agree with them. It means I'm just helping you understand why other people think the way that they think. And the bottom line is, as I've told you many times before here on the show, a lot of people don't think. But anyway, now he has finally mentioned the name George Floyd. He's going to talk about him more as we continue. Well, let's continue. For this actual lived, physically experienced reality of violence in the USA, there are no marches, no tearful emails from departmental heads, no support from McDonald's and Walmart. For the history department, our silence is not a mere abrogation of our duty to shed light on the truth. It is a rejection of it. Out of the paragraph now. The professor now is getting direct with the history department, saying, as professors in the positions that we're in, we're people who are charged with helping young people develop their minds, learn to think, learn to challenge the things that you hear, and challenge them to come up with their own ideas and their own conclusions. But we have completely rejected doing that at all by adopting this one way of looking at why black people are in the situation that they're in and saying it must be because of this. And we're not allowing any other type of conversation, which is he is absolutely right. And I can understand if I'm in a position of being a professor. Listen, I have a podcast. I write books. I have my own brand and business. It pisses me off. I can be sure that he's annoyed by it because he can't even say anything in his own classroom. Continuing. Claim that black interracial violence is the product of redlining, slavery, and other injustices is a largely historical claim. It is for historians, therefore, to explain why Japanese internment or the massacre of European Jewry hasn't led to equivalent rates of dysfunction and low SES performance among Japanese and Jewish Americans, respectively. Arab Americans have been viciously demonized since 9/11, as have Chinese Americans more recently. However, both groups outperform white Americans on nearly all indices, as do Nigerian Americans, who incidentally have black skin. It is for historians to point out and discuss these anomalies. However, no real discussion is possible in the current climate at our department. The explanation is provided to us, disagreement with it is racist, and the job of historians is to further explore additional ways in which the explanation is additionally correct. This is a mockery of the historical profession. This is where the author is getting very indignant. I'm out of the paragraph, by the way. This is where he is really getting direct with the department, as direct as he can be, being he wrote the letter anonymously to save his ass, which he had to do, and I completely understand. He's basically saying, look, as a historian, our job is to challenge things. People put out these things and say, oh, this is history. This is actually what happened. Our job is to challenge what happened and find out if that's really what happened, or is it just a story? Is it just his story instead of history? But he's making it clear, we can't even do that. You all are telling us what the history is supposed to be. Here's what we're supposed to believe. Here's what everybody's supposed to say. And if anyone says anything different, you're not allowed to say it. If you disagree, you're racist, you're a coon, you're wrong, and you're going to be completely canceled. Everyone knows that. Everyone feels it right now. And this is why a lot of people are not saying what this guy put out here, and he's not saying it because we don't even know who he is because of this situation that we have going on right now. He also mentioned how Jewish Americans or European Jews, who we all have heard of the Holocaust, they faced a similar attack on their beings as people as blacks did when it came to slavery. But you don't see Jewish people using that as an excuse some 100 plus years later from whenever it happened. or whatever amount of time from when it happened. They're not using that as an excuse anymore. But Black people always like to harken back to slavery and years of this and years of that, when nobody who's alive right now was a slave. No one who's alive right now was devoid of civil rights. Now, I'm not saying that those things didn't happen. I'm not saying that they don't matter. What I'm saying is there are other groups who have faced these types of attack from another group because of who they were as a person. Again, he mentioned the Japanese. He mentioned the European Jews. He mentioned the Arab Americans after 9/11. He mentioned Chinese Americans after or during COVID-19. None of them is using that as an excuse, and none of them have actually statistically underperformed as people due to that. And they would never use that as an excuse for underperformance. It's just the fact that they underperform. But you can't say that to or about a Black person, even as a Black person. Again, how many times am I going to say that? Let's continue. Most troublingly, our department appears to have been entirely captured by the interests of the Democratic National Convention and the Democratic Party more broadly. To explain what I mean, consider what happens if you choose to donate to Black Lives Matter, an organization Cal Berkeley History has explicitly promoted in its recent email. All donations to the official BLM website are immediately redirected to Act Blue Charities, an organization primarily concerned with bankrolling election campaigns for Democratic candidates. Donating to BLM today is to indirectly donate to Joe Biden's 2020 campaign. This is grotesque, given the fact that American cities with the worst rates of Black-on-Black violence and police-on-Black violence are overwhelmingly Democrat-run. Minneapolis itself has been entirely in the hands of Democrats for over five decades. The, quote, systemic racism, close quote, there was built by successive Democrat administrations. So out of the paragraph now, this is something that I've heard a few people say, that the BLM website, if you go there and donate, you actually get routed to this website called Act Blue Charities. And Act Blue makes it very clear on their website that they use their money to fund Democratic candidates for political races. So Black Lives Matter is not just some independent thing run by Black people who have independent thoughts and independent voices. It's run by a charity that, or is routed through the money that Black Lives Matter gets. Let's be clear, not just their whole message, but the money goes through Act Blue Charities, which is specifically for Democratic campaigns. They have to announce that, and they announce it clearly. So when you donate to Black Lives Matter, or you're supporting Black Lives Matter, you are supporting a Democratic campaign. Now, he's saying here that, listen, Democrats run the very city where the George Floyd situation took place. And Democrats, if you pay any attention on social media or you listen, any of you who find yourself to be a Democrat or you've ever voted Democrat, which I have, you realize that the Democrats don't give any more of a damn about Black people than the Republicans do. But they have made this story, they have framed this story that Democrats are for Black people. And Joe Biden himself, I mean, some many of you may have heard the interview when Joe Biden was on The Breakfast Club. He was speaking directly, specifically to Charlamagne Tha God, when he said, if you have to decide between me and Donald Trump, you ain't Black. And now Joe Biden, in case you didn't know, he's very white. All right. So for him to make a statement like that is, I think, it very disrespectful to Black people to even make such a statement, because you're not Black to be saying who's Black and who's not. And he was trying to pull the Black card by saying, all right, well, look, I'm not Donald Trump. So that means since you're Black, you got to vote for me. And that is something that if you ask anyone who follows politics like that, I'm not that person. But if you ask anyone who does, they'll tell you this is the attitude that Democrats have had towards Blacks for a very long time, that we pretty much have your vote in our pocket. We don't have to earn it, because we know we'll just say that we're Democrats. We'll just position ourselves as different from the Republican who is, quote unquote, white, and you're going to vote for us. And this is how it's been for a very long time. And I hear a lot of Black leaders, quote unquote leaders, saying that the Black vote must be earned. The challenge with that is, in this upcoming election, is that many Black people have positioned themselves as anti-Donald Trump. And then Joe Biden just said what he said, which is basically saying, I got your vote anyway, because I'm not Donald Trump. And even though I'm just as white as he is. So now if the Black vote has to be earned, well, who's going to earn it? There's only two candidates, at least two that really have a chance of winning. So what happens next? I'm waiting for one of our leaders to tell us what that is. Anyway, let's continue. The patronizing and condescending attitudes of Democratic leaders towards the Black community, exemplified by nearly every Biden statement on the Black race, all but guarantee a perpetual state of misery, resentment, poverty, and attendant grievance politics, which are simultaneously annihilating American political discourse and Black lives. And yet, donating to BLM is bankrolling the election campaigns for men like Mayor Frey, who saw their cities devolve into violence. This is a grotesque capture of a good faith movement for necessary police reform and of our department by a political party. Even worse, there are virtually no avenues for dissent in academic circles. I refuse to serve the party, and so should you. So he, the professor, out of paragraph now, he goes on to make those exact point that I made about Joe Biden. He didn't say it as graphically as I said it, but that thing that I quoted is exactly what Joe Biden said. And he mentions Mayor Frey, who is Jacob Frey, who is the mayor of the city of Minneapolis, who obviously Minneapolis is the place where George Floyd lost his life. But Mayor Frey is a Democrat, and Minneapolis has been a Democratic city for a very long time, as he said, over five decades. So if it's the Democrats who are supposed to protect Black people, this is ground zero where this whole thing began. It's been Democratic for a very long time, for longer than many of us have been alive. What's the problem? If it's Democratic, the Democrats obviously are not here to save us, but then we're saying Black Lives Matter, and Black Lives Matter sends their money to the Democratic Party. So can you see how this can be problematic? I think you can. Let's continue. The total alliance of major corporations involved in human exploitation with BLM should be a warning flag to us, and yet this damning evidence goes unnoticed, purposefully ignored, and perversely celebrated. We are the useful idiots of the wealthiest classes carrying water for Jeff Bezos and other actual, real, modern-day slavers. Starbucks, an organization using literal Black slaves in its coffee plantation suppliers, is in favor of BLM. Sony, an organization using cobalt mined by yet more literal Black slaves, many of whom are children, is in favor of BLM. And so, apparently, are we. The absence of counter-narratives enables this obscenity. Fiat lux, indeed. So what the professor is explaining here is that he's citing examples of companies like Starbucks who get their coffees from plantation suppliers who actually do employ slaves outside of the USA, that is. Sony doing the same thing using cobalt mined by Black slaves, many of them children. I don't know these to be facts, but he is stating them, so I'm going to assume he can back them up. And they're both in favor of BLM, which I do know to be true. And BLM is sending all their money to the Democratic Party. This is all Democratic-driven, Democrat Party-driven, to get money to them so they can fund themselves to fight, I guess, against Donald Trump to win the next election. And I don't get into politics that closely, but I have seen and heard things like this before today. I did not just come across this one today. I've heard these arguments before. And the phrase that this professor uses that stuck with me here is the useful idiots of the wealthiest classes. In other words, Black people and the influence that we have when it comes to social media, when it comes to sports and entertainment, we have basically been used because many of us have positioned ourselves as super, super Democrat, not even knowing what the Democrats are about, what they're actually doing, and what's the games that are being played beneath the surface that we don't notice because so many people only skim the surface and don't look any deeper. And these are the kind of things that are taking place in the long run that, again, we're not paying attention to. We're not even noticing what's being done. So this is the point that he's making here. He's saying we, as a university, our whole point is to be an institution of higher learning. We are not even allowed to question these things right now in the current climate. That's what the professor says here. Let's move on. There also exists a large constituency of what can only be called, quote, race hustlers, close quote. Hucksters of all colors who benefit from stoking the fires of racial conflict to secure administrative jobs, charity management positions, academic jobs, and advancement, or personal political entrepreneurship. Given the direction our history department appears to be taking, far from any commitment to truth, we can regard ourselves as a formative training institution for this brand of snake oil salespeople. Their activities are corrosive, demolishing any hope at harmonious racial coexistence in our nation and colonizing our political and institutional life. Many of their voices are unironically segregationists. What I'm reading the professor say here out of the paragraph is that many of the students at Cal Berkeley are now being trained to think in the way that everyone is being forced to think right now because that's the only thing they're allowed to teach. You can't say anything else because somebody's going to record it, post it, and then you're going to end up getting canceled by the social media lynch mob and maybe by your own company, wherever it is that you're working. So these fires of racial conflict that are being stoked by the race hustlers, and there are many of them out there, some of them aligning themselves with Black Lives Matter, many of them very active on social media, and you'll know who they are by looking at what they post. All they post are videos and posts that tell you some other way that Black people have been victimized by somebody white, which all that does is stir up the crowd and get people to feel more like victims, but doesn't actually help us move forward. I've seen many of these individuals. I completely agree with that. Well, let's continue. MLK, that's Martin Luther King, would likely be called an Uncle Tom if he spoke on our campus today. We are training leaders who intend explicitly to destroy one of the only truly successful ethnically diverse societies in modern history. As the PRC, that is the People's Republic of China, that's China he's referring to, an ethno-nationalist and aggressively racially chauvinist national polity with null immigration and no concept of jus soli's increasingly presents itself as the global political alternative to the USA, I ask you, is this wise? Are we really doing the right thing? Well, the first sentence, I don't know, I'm out of paragraph now. The first sentence that he talked about Martin Luther King is the one I want to address. I don't know that much about what China has going on, but many people do. So you can read up on that on your own. Martin Luther King was a guy, he was not about separating. He was not a separationist. Martin Luther King was about integrating, getting everybody together, not demonizing anyone. No, he had a dream, as Martin Luther King said. Everyone knows about that speech. This professor is saying that Martin Luther King was to come and say what he said then, now, people would attack him. They would not be willing to listen to him because everyone is all about dividing right now. Dividing and saying, hey, if you're not on our side, then you're against our side. There's no bringing everybody together. No, it's our side and their side. Martin Luther King was not about that at all. Yet people celebrate Martin Luther King every single day. I think many people don't even know what his message actually was. Let's continue. As a final point, our university and department has made multiple statements celebrating and eulogizing George Floyd. Floyd was a multiple felon who once held a pregnant black woman at gunpoint. He broke into her home with a gang of men and pointed a gun at her pregnant stomach. He terrorized the women in his community. He sired and abandoned multiple children, playing no part in their support or upbringing, failing one of the most basic tests of decency for a human being. He was a drug addict and sometime drug dealer, a swindler who preyed upon his honest and hardworking neighbors. And yet, the Regents of University of Cal and the historians of the UCB History Department are celebrating this violent criminal, elevating his name to virtual sainthood, a man who hurt women, a man who hurt black women. With the full collaboration of the UCB History Department, corporate America, most mainstream media outlets, and some of the wealthiest and most privileged opinion-shaping elites of the USA, he has become a culture hero buried in a golden casket, his recognized family showered with gifts and praise. I'm out of the paragraph now. Now, this is where he gets directly about George Floyd. Now, Candace Owens, who is a, I guess we can say, conservative black woman, conservative politically, black woman, did a 17-minute rant video about George Floyd, where she mentions these same things, that George Floyd had been in and out of prison, that he had multiple children, that he was not being a father to, that he actually was arrested for a aggravated robbery. He did time in jail for an aggravated robbery where he broke into the home of a black woman, put a gun at her pregnant stomach, and he was looking for money and drugs. And that's the charge that he got. That's something that many people do not mention when George Floyd's name comes up. What I will say, and what this professor will go on to say in his defense later on, that what happened to George Floyd was not right. But at the same time, people celebrating him as this professor again, the same, and Candace Owens said this also, celebrating him as a hero is also not the move. Now, what I say about that when it comes to George Floyd is he's not allowed to defend himself. So these points, I don't consider these points necessary to be continually brought up. I haven't heard people really call him a hero. I think what people are seeing in George Floyd is that he was the touchstone. He was the signal that got everybody awake again to go and do all the things that are going on right now. Would I call George Floyd a hero? Well, to be a hero, you have to have actually done a specific thing. He didn't do anything. He was the victim of something that obviously didn't look good. And we'll see what happens in court when that case shakes out. But as far as someone bringing up his past and questioning his character as a person, this professor is not the first one to have done that. I've heard multiple people do it, and they're bringing up facts. You know, like we got to say these days, hashtag facts. I'm not saying that I would have said it this way, but I understand people who do. Let's continue. Americans are being socially pressured into kneeling for this violent, abusive misogynist. A generation of black men are being coerced into identifying with George Floyd, the absolute worst specimen of our race and species. I'm ashamed of my department. I would say that I'm ashamed of both of you, but perhaps you agree with me and are simply afraid, as I am, of the backlash of speaking the truth. It's hard to know what kneeling means when you have to kneel to keep your job. Let's just go to the next paragraph. I don't have to add anything to that. It shouldn't affect the strength of my argument above, but for the record, I write as a person of color. My family have been personally victimized by men like George Floyd. We are aware of the condescending depredations of the Democrat Party against our race. The humiliating assumption that we are too stupid to do STEM, that we need special help and lower requirements to get ahead in life, is richly familiar to us. I sometimes wonder if it wouldn't be easier to deal with open fascists who at least would be straightforward in calling me a subhuman and who are unlikely to share my race. So here's the first point in this email where the professor actually outs himself as a person of color. I already knew that, but I told you that up front. But he says, my family has been victimized by people like Floyd, so that can help explain his sharp comments against somebody like George Floyd earlier. And then he said the humiliating assumption that being black means you're not smart enough to do science or technology or engineering or mathematics, that you need special help and special requirements to get ahead in life. He doesn't like that, obviously. Being a professor, I'm assuming he's saying that he had to work his way up and other people should expect to do the same. And this harkens back to me saying we are not victims, and I don't like black people presenting themselves as victims or accepting being looked at as victims by white America, as again, I've said many times in writing and on this show. And he rather people just come out and tell him that they believe that he's lesser rather than pretending that it's something different as the Democrats do. Continuing, the ever-present soft bigotry of low expectations and a permanent claim that the solutions to the plight of my people rest exclusively on the goodwill of whites rather than our own hard work is psychologically devastating. No other group in America is systematically demoralized in this way by its alleged allies. A whole generation of black children are being taught that only by begging and weeping and screaming will they get the handouts from guilt-ridden whites. So here, out of the paragraph, he's referring to the victim mentality that I've mentioned many times already here. Low expectations of black people, claim that the solutions of black people are basically based in whatever white people can do for us. That is complete victimhood, complete victim mentality that a lot of black people have accepted. Because I don't know, they like the handouts, they like the attention that comes with it. I don't know why, but I do see that a lot of people have accepted it. You can draw your own conclusions. Next, no message will more surely devastate their future, especially if whites run out of guilt, or indeed if America runs out of whites. This has been done to Japanese Americans or Jewish Americans or Chinese Americans in Chinatown and Japantown will surely be no different than the roughest parts of Baltimore and East St. Louis today. The History Department of UCB is now an integral institution promulgator of a destructive and denigrating fallacy about the black race. Now, only a couple paragraphs left. Here's where the professor is saying that if Japanese Americans, Chinese Americans, or Jews had been looked at the same way that black people get looked at in America, and had they accepted it, their communities would be just as terrible and people would be in just as bad places and be looking at themselves as victims in the exact same way had they decided to accept this sale that they got from a certain portion of America. And the History Department of UCB, where this professor works, he is implementing them. He's saying, all right, this department is a part of it now because we are putting out this self-destructive and denigrating fallacy about black people that we need help and that is white people's fault that we're in a position that we're in. And he is adamantly against this. And he's saying it in the most tactful way possible, in the most academic way possible, but he is saying it. Let's continue. Two paragraphs to go. I hope you appreciate the frustration behind this message. I do not support Black Lives Matter. I do not support the Democrat grievance agenda and the party's uncontested capture of our department. I do not support the party co-opting my race, as Biden recently did in his disturbing interview, claiming that voting Democrat and being black are isomorphic. I condemn the manner of George Floyd's death and join you in calling for greater police accountability and police reform. However, I will not pretend that George Floyd was anything other than a violent misogynist, a brutal man who met a predictably brutal end. I also want to protect the practice of history. Cleo is no groveling handmaiden to politicians and corporations. Like us, she is free. Now, that's the end of the letter. That was two paragraphs that I read there. Now, he made it clear he doesn't support Black Lives Matter or the Democratic grievance agenda or the party's capture of the UCB History Department. UCB History Department, basically, in his words, he's saying that they are basically parroting everything that the Democratic Party has been saying about black people being victims of white people and needing help from white people. And this has tricked many black people into supporting Black Lives Matter, which is supporting the Democratic Party as if the Democrats are our savior. I don't think they are. I mean, Barack Obama was a Democrat. We had 8 years of him. So if your life is still fucked up at this point, then obviously it ain't the president or government that's going to save you. Again, this is not a new thing coming from me. If you never heard it before, understand it's not the first time I said it. It might just be the first time you heard it. And when it comes to George Floyd, now, there's something that I talked about on my live is that you may notice on my Instagram live or Facebook live, that is that you may notice that often these victims of when people say police brutality or police killing Black people, is very rarely a person who is rich or a person who has a lot of money or a person who is well off or a person who's in a really good situation. Every now and then, it may be a few, but often it's people from lower class backgrounds. Now, what does that mean? Am I saying that lower class people deserve to be brutalized and killed by police? No. What I'm saying is something that a person with George Floyd's background, according to statistics, usually end up either spending a lot of their lives in and out of prison, which George Floyd already had been doing, or something like this happens, but usually it happens at the hands of a Black person. It doesn't often happen at the hands of a cop. Now, let me tell you something. There are hundreds of George Floyds around the United States who will die before their time. They will die of violence, and 99 out of 100 of them are going to die at the hands of another Black man. They're not going to die at the hands of the cops. That is, again, statistically proven. That is not my opinion. It is not a theory. It is statistically proven, and it is what this professor said here in his letter. He's not saying it to attack George Floyd or to attack Black people or to attack people who may not be as accomplished as he is. What he's saying is these facts are actual facts, and it should be allowed for people to say these things, especially in academia. But the way that you all, that's the UCB History Department, are positioning yourselves and ourselves, nobody can say anything like that. Otherwise, we will be canceled. And he's really pissed off about that. And I completely understand why. Now I've read this entire letter. Again, the link will be down below. I'd be interested to hear your feedback. You have anything to say about this? Hopefully it opens your eyes to some things, caused you to think about some things. Because if it didn't do that, then this episode has failed its purpose. Work on your game. Dre all day.